Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Hello and welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you're joining us for our 101st episode of our show. Thrilled to be here with Darren Bunch, who's out there in California. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach, the seaside golf capital of the world, and a very special guest, to say the least, the voice, the man, the beacon of light, the shining one. How else can I say it? For all of us who travel and play golf, Matt Ginella will take our Emergency 9 Golf Travel Quiz in just a moment. He is prepared, he is ready, and we will get to him. I wanted to mention, as we get going, that once again, we are presented to you by Two Under Apparel, the fantastic Two Under Apparel, home of the world-famous Joey Pouch. Comfortable, functional, incredible performance. I speak from experience when I tell you that if you're not wearing Two Under right now, as you listen to this podcast, you're making a mistake. And here's a great deal. Go to twounder.com. That's the number two, UNDR.com. Put in promo code GNN20 for 20% off. You can thank us later. All right, Darren.
Yes.
We are here. We had a great 100th episode with Matty G. I really think he had fun as well. We can ask him in just a second, but what a great thing for us to be able to have Matt on with us and talk golf and golf travel and now to take the Emergency 9.
Yep. And Matt, welcome. And I believe we hear your son Bandon in the background a little bit there too.
Yeah, I'm, first of all, thanks for having me. Congratulations again on 100 episodes. What an honor to be part of number 100. And love talking golf with people who love talking golf. And so really, really, really enjoying this. And my wife left for the afternoon. I'm here, you know, multitasking with baby Bandon. We're throwing a golf ball around a living room. So pardon the background noise, but sorry, not sorry, I should say.
You're
sorry,
darn right. Sorry. Okay. You are darn right.
Yeah. He's part of the gig now. He's just as important as everything that I can possibly imagine.
Matt, I have a quick question about the baby. If you have another baby, are you going to name it Sheep Ranch?
Well, Pinehurst was pretty clever. Said, okay, well, obviously your second child will be called number two. I mean, that would be number two. That will be my guy. Hopefully, Dan, we never even have to discuss this. This is it. This is going to be one and done for me. My wife has three children, so this is, I went 0 to 4 pretty quickly. And given my sort of selfish, self-centered, you know, narcissistic life that I was living for the greater part of my existence, I've got all that I can handle right now, believe me.
Well, all of it's great. And it still, at this point, has not stopped you from doing what we love you doing, although we love that part too, obviously. And anybody that follows you on Instagram and on Twitter, but especially on Instagram, gets a hit on what an amazing, fantastic journey this has not only been, but has become. So congratulations to you on that. The older you get, and I speak from one who is a good portion older than you, you could be my son. Now that I think about it, it only gets better and it only gets more important. So cool. That's all I could say.
Yeah. No, it is. It is cool. It is. The whole thing is cool. I used to just, you know, travel around and see, you know, people playing golf. And now I see people with their kids playing golf and I project myself in that situation. I think to myself, you know, I've been playing in the father-son event in Waterville, for years, playing with, you know, John Ashworth as a friend in what they call the adopted category, thinking to myself, wow, what a great experience. Now I think to myself, what would that experience be like if I actually play with my son? And mm-hmm. I can't wait for that to be a reality one day. There and everywhere, right? I mean, anything, I just hope he plays.
Well, he's either going to be all in or he'll be all out. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I know.
I'm prepared. Hopefully, he'll be all in. He's going to have a lot of great experiences and fun. He'll have so. He's already had so. He's had more fun in 10 months than many people have in their whole lifetime. So, I think he's good to go. All right, let's dive in. I think we're ready. Most of the people, well, everybody who's listened to you, watched you, and heard all the places you've been and the courses you love, we may have to alter this slightly for you, and of course, you're worthy of alteration. The first question, your favorite course and or destination anywhere in the world, and we know that you've mentioned a number of places. I'm not going to say them in case they happen to be this, but if you feel like you want to give us what's next, other than a few of those places, be our guest.
I wrote down a few here, and you know, I mean, if I had to only say one, I mean, there are a lot of special places for me for a lot of different reasons and a lot of different times in my life, and a lot of certainly, you know, Bandon Dunes. You know, I named my son Bandon. It's a place that I was going with my family and friends. Even before I was, a travel journalist, so to speak. I'm from Northern California. We used to play a tournament up in Eureka. We go on from Eureka up to Bandon. I've kind of been following the progress and development of Bandon Dunes and sort of the spirituality there and the people I've played with there and the memories I have there. And my uncle got me, sort of into the game and kind of nurtured my interest in the game, and I used to, go there with him a lot, and he passed last year. So, Bandon is obvious. People would say, oh, it's going to be Bandon Dunes. And yes, it's Bandon Dunes, but, La Hinch is on the list, Waterville, places like Ardglass because of the experience I had there with the group I was with, Cruden Bay, for a lot of the same reasons that I would say Ardglass, so, you know what I mean? It's really hard to pinpoint one, but these are, I had a wedding reception at Goat Hill Park. The first golf course my son ever really kind of played around on was Winter Park 9 locally here in Orlando. You can go on and on, but that's why I feel lucky to have had these experiences I've had. And it's why I don't take it for granted, is because I am collecting these places and people and moments and memories, and that's what it's all about, right? That's what we live for.
I think we've done, this is the 101st episode of all the emergency nines that we have done, which is, probably half. Matt Janella is the only person I would allow to really say all of golf and every course and destination is my answer.
How about the old course? I'd even say the old course, which I had one of the more memorable, is the old course.
See, and he could keep going. That's what's great.
Well, and he's one of the first people who talked about, it's not just about the golf course. It's about the people you're with. It's about how you tie those experiences to things that have happened in your life and times in your life. And, that's what makes it so memorable, and why it's such a personal question to everybody we've had on the show over all these episodes.
True.
I got to bring my wife and baby. So my wife, the naming of Bandon happened because we were kind of spitballing ideas of like, what could we possibly name our son, and and what means a lot to us, and what, and add in layers of spirituality and all that stuff. And, and then you look up what Bandon actually means: determined, friend of the people, optimistic. You find out there's also a little sister town of Bandon, Oregon, in Bandon, Ireland, and they've got a relationship. So you add up all these things, and then I got to bring my wife to Bandon last year, and bring baby Bandon to Bandon, and then how about that experience? And we walked the golf course, played a couple holes on the short course, played a couple holes on Bandon, of course, watch the sunset go down on, the 16th green there of Bandon Dunes. I mean, that's when you start, okay, it's hard to compete with that. What I mean? When you have those kinds of things.
True.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, you're right, Dad.
he heard that. He heard that story. He can confirm. He had a good time. It was as though he had been there before.
All right. Question number two. And to lead into this, I want to talk about one of the things on my personal bucket list outside of golf is something that you and Katie have both done. I was sitting watching a basketball game. I'm a huge Warriors fan. And the camera panned, and I said to myself, wow, that looks a lot like Matt Ginella and his wife. And so sitting courtside at a Warriors game is one of the things on my bucket list. I know that you on Twitter not long ago put kind of your all things sports bucket list together, but we want to know what is at the top of your golf bucket list.
That South African safari is something I'd really love to do. That golf safari where you're kind of mixing. I've always wanted to go on one of those safaris. I've always wanted to sort of immerse yourself in that world and kind of be humbled by, what goes on, in the plains of South Africa. And then the idea of mixing that with a golf trip and the wine and the more I've done on something like that, the more I think, man, that would be kind of an experience that you don't get anywhere else. And that's something I hope to do one day.
That's outstanding. I actually did something similar in Kenya a number of years ago. And it's one of the more memorable things. I got to do it with my father. And so it was fun. 4 days of golf, 4 days of safari. Man, I can't recommend it highly enough. It's an incredible part of the world to go visit. I noticed on your other list that you said you've never been to Nebraska to play golf, which stunned me. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Sand Hills is obviously private, so that's kind of the one that you'd want to definitely go. So for Golf Digest, for 5.5-6 years of doing travel stories for Golf Digest, you can't really justify that being one of your trips that you take. So you do 12 trips a year for, 12 issues a year. I never got to do it there. And then I can't do it for the Golf Channel because you don't go and tell stories about where, tell about people about a place they can't play. And I know there's a lot of great golf around there, but, what that course has meant to the world of modern course architecture. And what I think of Corin Crenshaw and what that meant to Mike Kaiser to be able to start that. I know it's crazy. And it's a hole in my glove and I got to get that fixed as soon as possible. I hope to do it this year. I wanted to do it last year and the year before. For some reason, like I said, I'm only one person. You can only do so much, you can only get to so many places, and that's got to be on the shortlist.
Well, I would say I'm a big fan of Dismal River, but the Prairie Club is one of my favorite places in the country, and so much great golf there. They've done such a great job, and it's, I think it's an hour away from Sand Hills, so, there's your excuse to get to Nebraska for the travel side.
I know, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, you should be, because it's not like you've been doing anything else. All right, let's move on to the third question. And obviously, as a world traveler, you've stayed in a lot of different places. And I realize as we're asking you these questions, we could be putting you at risk with a lot of the people who you know and whose places you've played and stayed at. But this is just our little golf travel quiz, so... the best place
it'll just be between us and all your followers.
We won't tell anybody. This is just me and Darren. Where is what you would consider to be, and again, this takes in a lot of different things, but the best place you've ever stayed, some place that you go, boom.
See, again, fortunate enough to be spoiled in that sense. My wife, she's been on it, on this quote journey for the last couple of years. And, we went to Sea Island and, we stayed at the lodge and, she grew up in Atlanta. And I don't think she understood golf. She worked for the Back Nine Network for a short amount of time. And so she kind of understands the golf landscape. And when we went to Sea Island, she was like, wow. And every other place since then, when I say, hey, we're going here, we're going there, she goes, on a scale of zero to Sea Island, where is it? zero to Sea Island. And so that's it's been kind of a running joke. And to be honest with you, it's hard to compete with that level of comfort, service, and you know what I'm saying? That lodge at Sea Island to me is a special little spot. I went to a place called Royal Isabella in Puerto Rico, and unfortunately, I've heard that you know, in the wake of the hurricane, it might, you know, I don't know what state it's in right now, but Royal Isabella had these private these little individual cottages on this hillside overlooking this beautiful bay. And, you know, the golf course isn't a place where I would say, hey, everybody, you got to go play this golf course. Because it was kind of, you know, they kind of built it themselves. But the lodging and the location and the level of service and comfort was pretty amazing there. And then Ashford Castle, in Ireland, where Rory McIlroy got married, that, you know, I recently stayed there and I was like, okay, this on a scale of zero to Sea Island, this is like zero to Ashford Castle now. You know, that's like the 11. So, you know, you can go on and on, but for the short answer would be the Sea Island Lodge. I think it's a special place and people should experience that level of service because I don't think you get it enough here in America. I think service is a bit of a lost art to the point where when you do finally get it, you say, wow, that's amazing service. And we don't say that enough, unfortunately.
Once you've experienced something like that, I mean, it's a good analogy to say that Katie compares everything to it because, you know, I found that with a few of the places that I've stayed here in the country, that it's just, you just can't forget them. And then you're constantly comparing, which is a good thing and a bad thing, I guess, that you're always comparing to the best places you've ever stayed.
Yeah. Well, that, and it's natural. That's how it works, right? I mean, that's, you know, a bar gets set and then thus everything gets compared against it. That's kind of the way it goes.
Well, in all of these travels, what's the single best thing you've ever eaten on a trip and where was it?
A lot of good answers here on this one. But, you know, we talked about Kahuku in our last conversation, the little short course, 9-hole course around the corner from Turtle Bay and North Shore of Oahu. Right around the corner from that golf course is a little superette that you would never think to notice. And there's a little poke bowl in the back of that little superette that I'm telling you is one of the best poke bowls you'll ever have in your life. The prime rib chili, obviously, at the tap room gets a lot of play. I'm gonna go with the burger dog at Silverado. That's something that once you have it, you think to yourself, I could eat these until I die. Like, I could eat these right now until my body just absolutely stops working. The burger dog at Silverado, made famous, obviously, at the Olympic Club, the Parrish mm-hmm. family. I got to go the burger dog.
Have you ever had a cheesesteak down the hill from Goat Hill Park?
No.
The little strip mall down at the bottom right before the freeway. When Mitch and I went on that trip a few weeks back, we were with Pete Flanagan, who's regripped on Twitter and has his own blog. And we were talking about, well, what do we want to grab to eat afterward? And he said, I've heard nothing but good things about this great little cheesesteak place. And obviously I don't think about cheesesteak as being something that I get a lot in California, but it was outstanding. And it's this little hole in the wall and just another example of those places you just don't expect to be where they are. And there's so many of them, you know, we could dedicate an entire show just to those types of places.
Correct. And that's what it's all about, right? Sure.
Burger dogs deserve their own episode, I think.
episode 102, Burger Dogs.
Burger Dogs.
Burger Dogs. Yep. Done.
All right. Next up, besides golf and people, and just knowing the kind of person you are and what we talked about in our last podcast episode, I have a feeling I know what this is going to be. But besides the golf and the people, what's the most important thing to you on a golf trip? What do you look for? What do you remember?
Besides the golf and people, those are pretty important. I would say people, then golf, right? I mean, right. It's not about where you are, it's who you're with. I do believe that. And it becomes more and more true every day of life, right? And I would go, but after that, I think we just touched on it, but I think it is service. I think it is that sense that you have where you feel, where you stop thinking about how much you're paying to be there or to play there, and you start thinking about what a great experience you're having. So what enhances that experience beyond the people you're with and the place you're at? And that goes to the people who are making sure you're having a memorable experience. And, you know, that's that's an underestimated and undervalued component of places like Bandon Dunes, where a local community really gets behind and commits to the vision of a guy like Mike Kaiser and says, you know, at the end of the day, Mike Kaiser is only as good as the people who work at Bandon Dunes. So people like Shu, who greets you there at that mm-hmm. opening circle, that what a lasting impact he has on everybody who comes through there. You know, that people like that, I don't know how much Shu makes, but he should be making twice whatever he makes, because the impact that he has on people like myself or yourselves who go to Bandon Dunes, you think to yourself, that guy shows up every day. He loves what he does. He loves where he's at. He's going to come with a smile on his face. Make sure you have a smile on your face. What, how much is that worth? I don't know, but it's, what it does is it makes the shuttle drivers abandoned. They commit. They're there to help you have a great, memorable experience. Service is something that I don't think people care enough about. I don't care how great your development is, and how great your golf is, and how great your setting is, your location is. If you don't have people executing your vision on the ground, point to point, it's not going to be a memorable experience, and you're going to struggle.
That's a great point. I agree with you that service is overlooked so often, and you go to a place that you're all geeked up to play, and then you just don't feel that warmth, and it doesn't ruin the experience, but it doesn't elevate it to where you expected it to be. So it's almost in a way a letdown.
I find it all over the, you know, I can tell right away, you know, in the first few minutes of arriving at any place I go, course, destination, US, you know, overseas, whatever the case may be, you can tell in the first few minutes, if you really pay attention, you can say, wow, this place is successful because of the interaction you have with the first person you see. I mean, you can almost make a snap judgment on almost every situation and say, wow, this person has buy-in to the total vision and energy and mission statement of whatever it is. And if the place doesn't even have a mission statement, then that's a fault of leadership already. But you know what I mean? Like, I get the vibe, like I just get the vibe right away and be like, wow, I want more of this place, or I've had enough of this place. If I'm saying I've had enough of this place right when I pull up, that's a real bad sign.
A friend of mine, Chuck Hogan, who is a sports psychologist and great golf interactor, he said, how you do one thing is how you do everything. And he told me that 25 years ago, and it always comes back to me because it's really the truth. If you pull in, like you're saying, and the first hit you get pulling in, that is as much a statement about what the place is about as, wow, this room is really cool.
I always say that if you take a trip and you leave the trip and you talk and the general conversation is, God, I can't believe how much they're charging. How much did you spend? How much did it cost us? You know, and you're not talking about, I can't wait to go back. Unbelievable. Look at these pictures,
right?
Calling your friends, you know, share. Like if the conversation is about how much you spend and how much they're charging, that's a problem.
Yep.
If you're talking about what a great time you have and how I can't wait to get back and could you believe this? And let's talk about your favorite holes and what's your favorite course on property, where's the best? Then they've done something right. Then they've shifted the energy and focus away from whatever the cost is to what the experiences and memories are. That's a big difference.
All great points. All right, moving on to number six. What's the one piece of golf apparel or equipment you can't live without?
I'm going with my little, Bluetooth speaker. Music has definitely changed my golfing experience over the course of the last few years. And it's gotten to the point where it's hard for me to play without it. I find, you know, golf is about tempo and mindset and attitude and energy. And you know, with the right kind of, you know, play state, you know, the Pandora station and the kind of music set and the right vibe, it's easier to get over the bad shots and sort of the frustrating moments that golf can, you know, that can deliver on a regular basis. So I'm going with my little portable speaker.
Perfect.
Do you have a playlist, a golf playlist? Do you have a go-to artist that you're listening to?
My Pandora stations are Van Morrison, Alabama Shakes, Dire Straits is a good one, Pandora station. Those are sort of my golfing ones that I go to. And then obviously then, you know, you start liking and disliking it, and you can kind of, you know, shape them the way you want. Bob Marley is a good station. And then you kind of mix stations. So I mix an Alabama Shakes station with a Bob Marley station with Van Morrison station. And, I'm good.
Nice.
Do you know, I'll throw this in. I played a couple of weeks ago out here in Myrtle Beach, and of course, with a friend of mine, and they paired us up with two guys from New Jersey, and real New Jersey. And we pull up to the tee, and the guy says to us, one of them, one was a guy with a plumbing company, and one guy had an in-ground sprinkler company. So they, one guy said, "Do you mind if we play some music? It won't be too loud." And I said, "No, I love music. Fine." So I'm thinking New Jersey. I'm thinking Springsteen. I'm thinking, and these two guys who were probably in their 50s had the heaviest rap playlist you've ever heard. I mean, I was completely blown away. I was totally unprepared and completely blown away. And I talked to the guy I was playing with, and he wasn't a big fan of music. I said, "Let them go. They're down here. They're on vacation. It's not the end of the world. Maybe we'll find something we like." But it was really bizarre.
Go. No, I would say I do check in with the, you know, A, is it okay if we play music? And B, you know, how's the station going? Do I have any requests? You know,
right.
At some point you do have to make it about the group. I do believe
yeah.
that. Like, you can't just, you know, if you're playing music for everybody, you got to include everybody at some point.
Yeah, but these were two guys from Jersey. These were two guys from Jersey. They weren't interested in what I thought about the music. They were.
Yeah. Yeah. Know your place. Know your place, Mitch. Know your place. Know your
it's
place.
It's funny.
Yeah, good call by you.
I should have gone up to him and said, "Yo, do you have any Springsteen?"
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Next birdie gets to pick the next, you know, the place that, you know, the station or something.
Ooh,
you know
I mean? Like
oh,
it.
That,
I like
that
it.
Would be a good, that would be a good way to do it. You know, I yeah. played a lot of golf with Shane, our friend Shane Bacon, and he's always yeah. playing music. And I found myself one day we were playing together, and I think Don't Stop Believing by Journey came on or something. And I was like, wow, this really takes me back to my younger days. And then I thought to myself, this song was probably written before Shane was born and we're listening to it. So
possible,
you know, you
possible.
Never know what kind of music you're getting out there. So,
all right. The next question, and this is pretty interesting. We had a little bit of a discussion, before we actually started recording, but a little bit about your game. Cause I think there are people who actually don't know about your game. So quickly, what your handicap, what tees and yardage do you like? I know you probably move around because that's the kind of guy you are. Is there any place you really like to play from? And let's talk a little bit, briefly or not, about your recent discovery of woods, persimmon woods, to be specific.
All you had to do was say woods. That's it. That's the woods, period. That's it. I didn't really pick up the game hardcore until my senior in high school. I'd worked at golf courses all through high school. From mowing greens and picking ranges and running the tee sheet. I did a little bit of everything in Santa Rosa, California at both Oakmont Golf Course that has two 18s, one an executive 18 and one a bigger 18. And then Fountain Grove Golf Course, which is the home course of Cardinal Newman High School in Santa Rosa, California, which was, I was absolutely devastated by the fire. So, That was home base, and my uncle, oops, Bandon just turned on the TV, sorry.
What's he watching?
he's got a Winnie the Pooh, a heffalump.
You know, cool.
A heffalump.
Cool.
We're high end here, and his favorite movie is Moana. But I played college golf at St. Mary's College, you know, back in the early 90s before Tiger Woods really came on the scene, although I would come to golf courses, Hagen Oaks, and see that Eldrick Woods had won a tournament. And we thought, who is this guy? You know, I do remember seeing his board, a name on the board of different courses we go to at various college events, as he had just been there and won an event They still have the scoreboard up. I remember seeing that name. And we had four coaches in 4 years. The program was disarray. We only had really a two or three players who could really, shoot in the '70s on a regular basis. And there was the rest of us that had to fill a team. So luckily I was one of those guys who really, you know, they needed bodies. Can you believe that? St. Mary's College, Moraga, California, Division I program, they needed bodies. And I was probably a 3 or 4 handicap at the time at my home course in Oakmont. And I, you know, can you imagine, think about college golf now, you know, 20, 25 years later, there's no way a 4 or 5 handicap at their home course could be playing Division I college golf and making the team. This is not happening. So, I played at the right time and just always loved the game. If I wasn't doing what I was doing right now, I'd be a superintendent somewhere. Before I got the job at Sports Illustrated, I was an intern there. And while I was an intern, I was getting paperwork to attend Penn State's agronomy school because I thought I wanted to go be a superintendent. I wanted to run a golf course. And that's probably what I ultimately end up doing one day, and just walking away from this and going and working on a maintenance crew somewhere and hopefully running a golf course and waking up early in the morning mowing greens. I just love that. I'm now, after 6 years in New York of kind of going away from golf because it's Sports Illustrated, living in Manhattan, not having a car and kind of chasing a career and dreams. I didn't play a ton of golf when I was in New York. You know, it was from time to time. Then I went to Golf Digest, started really playing a lot more. I'm a, you know, kind of an 8 handy. I can shoot 84, I feel like, on every golf course in the world. I can figure out a way to shoot 84. You know, I mean, it just happens. However I get to 84, like 82, I can do it in so many different ways. If I do shoot 77, that's a really good day for me. I played good golf. I'm working really hard right now. I just got back from Morocco. I played a lot of golf with this 21-year-old kid who is a real, real talent. And I remember looking at his left leg and kind of focusing on his left leg when he was swinging, and it just stayed dead still. And my problem is I sway off the ball a lot, and I kind of attack it from the outside, and it's a bad move. And if I've got good tempo that day, it usually falls in online some close, and I can kind of get something going. But I also realized I don't practice anymore. And how do you get better at the game if you don't go to the range? And so this year in 2018, I'm committed to kind of keeping that left leg still and kind of, you know, and kind of keeping that distance between my knees there. And I'm trying to, you know, swing out to 1 o'clock on the 1 o'clock on the clock instead of 10 o'clock on the clock and sort of cutting across it. So I've got those two swing thoughts. I'm going to the range a lot more. I've made the switch from metal woods to persimmon woods, thanks to Link Soul, who, you know, talked to Louisville Golf and made a bunch of sets of these beautiful wooden clubs. And I've watched John Ashworth travel the world the last couple of years playing these persimmon woods, preaching, practicing what he preaches, and watching him, you know, have, you know, shoot 74 on any golf course in a wood with persimmons in any weather condition and not really sacrifice a ton of distance. And, you know, he put one in Ernie Els's hand, and Ernie drove it by one of the metalwoods he was using. Rory McIlroy used it and carried it 294. Xander Schauffele, Charlie Hoffman, Dean Wilson out of Goat Hill Park all, you know, used them and loved them. It's a great feeling, as you know. I'm preaching to the choir here. I have fallen in love with persimmon woods. 6,500 yards is all the golf course I could ever possibly want and need, for that matter. And I'm about 6 rounds into a life of persimmon woods, and it could not be happier. And it's reinvigorated my energy, to playing that feeling. The ball stays on the club face so much longer. It's a really cool feeling, sound. I can't say enough. If you haven't tried, I it's a great conversation point. You put it in people's hands, they hit it, they love it. And they're a thing of beauty. I'm so in, And it's super exciting.
Darren and I are speechless because obviously we are the choir. You're not just preaching to us. We are the choir, full bore, 100-year-old full bore.
I know. My favorite club growing up was that little Ginty 5-wood with a little rail on the bottom. Uh-huh. That cut through all the rut. I hit this persimmon 5-wood about 210 yards. So the 3-wood goes about 225 yards and the driver goes about, you know, 250, 255 yards. Mm-hmm. Well, if you really smack it, and you can draw, you can shape it, you can, and when your miss hits, yes, the miss hits don't go as far, but you know what? I don't want my miss hits going far. If my miss hits go far with a metalwood, they're going far out of bounds or across into another fairway. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, what I'm finding, I played Wilshire Country Club recently with the Persimmon Woods. It's a super tough, little tricky golf course. You got to really move the ball around. It's not about length. It is about precision. And I had a bunch of misses. I played with the same ball all day long. That is hard to do at Wilshire Country Club.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, how is that? Because I played with the Persimmon Woods. If I had played Metal Woods, I would have lost at least 4 or 5 golf balls. And what's that do to your score? Losing golf balls.
Yeah, goodbye.
And your psyche.
And your psyche. I think, and by the way, it's not much fun. I think playing Persimmon Woods on 6,500 yards for, you know, sort of blanket statement on the yardage and a golf course, and a place like Winter Park 9 or Goat Hill or wherever a lot of the short courses that we're talking about, that's more than I need. And by the way, I put in a driving 3-iron and you know, it makes me think more about sort of the strategy and yardage and how you know, again, I'm preaching the choir, but I could keep going on and on. We stepped up at Seminole. I'll give you one more anecdote. And with John Ashworth, and we get invited, and it's obviously special experience, and they go, oh, this is so cool. I'm nervous and tense and tight. And out comes Bob Ford and a group of his assistants out to the first tee, and the caddies are there, and we're playing Seminole, and boom, the member tees off, and my other buddy tees off, and I tee off, Metalwood's all good dry. Here comes John Ashworth, he pulls his, you know, Lynx Soul Persimmon Wood, you know, looks like basically a hybrid, right? It looks like a hybrid. And people are like, whoa, what the heck is this? What are you doing? And when did the conversation start? Everybody huddles around and intercepts John, and he's like, he's nervous now. Everyone's talking about Persimmon. Boom. He hits it by all of us. He hit it by everybody. He's mm-hmm. about 5 yards beyond everybody. He had a really nice draw, and it was like, I mean, I was like, man, I just admire his guts and sort of his, you know, this was probably a year ago. And I thought to myself, man, he's crazy. I can't believe he's doing it. Now I'm in the same boat. Now I'm going to be playing. I have no desire to go back.
Yeah, we run into that a lot. I mean, even at Goat Hill Park just recently, we're getting ready to tee off, and a guy saw Mitch and I with the Hickories and just came over, talked to us for like 10 minutes, watched us tee off. You know, and sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. Sometimes I can hit it in the middle of the fairway off the first tee, and sometimes, like that day, I hit kind of a half screaming roller. So, but it still doesn't stop the fun. It's such a different game when you do that. I was telling Mitch the other day, when I run out to get 9 holes in the afternoon these days, I have a bulldog, which is basically a 5-wood that I can hit tops out about 200 yards. And I've started going to the golf course with just the bulldog and a wedge and a putter just to work on my short game mostly. But I can hit anything from 150 to 200 yards with that bulldog club. And it makes you think differently about your shot making and how you play the game.
Yeah. And I think it promotes hand movement through the point of impact. You know, I think it does a lot of things. And when you hit it right, it's a home run with a wooden bat, right? I mean, it just feels like nothing. And you start chasing that feeling. You chart and that sort of sound that it doesn't make. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's hard to explain.
No, people who hear us, when you take out the wood and you stand there, even with the hickories, but the whole sound of it is a big part of it. You know, I always, when I talk to people about it, I always say, look, if the guys who played the game 100 years ago and were the best players in the world could hit the ball, I mean, Ted Ray hit it 300 yards all the time with a, you know, wooden head and a hickory shaft. It's what you said. It's not about the distance. It's about the game and the feel of all of it. But it's not, we're so accustomed now to the marketing and everything that's around selling golf clubs that I'm so happy to hear you talk about it this way, Matt. I can't even tell you.
Go back to Scotland's Gift, C.B. McDonald book, and pull excerpts out of there about about the distance issue and the concern of how the ball was going and how it could make courses obsolete and all mm-hmm. the different commentary. And you could pull quotes out of that book and put them next to quotes that are modern day quotes and take names off of them and jumble them up and put them on a piece of paper and say, what quote was, you know, during the turn of the 20th century and what was, you know, what's conversation is happening now. And you would not be able to know which is which. I'm telling you, it's like distance is always, if distance is an issue, go play Persimmon Woods. If you're so bothered by what you're seeing and hearing and talking about in terms of distance, go play Persimmon Woods. I you know, how many people who were railing about distance issue actually play Persimmon Woods? Not many.
No, not at all.
Well, we could talk about hickories and persimmons forever. Obviously, we all have a shared love of that. Let's move on to question number 8. Who is the most interesting person you've ever golfed with? And I got to think you have a wide range of people to choose from.
Yeah, I got the opportunity to play with Wayne Gretzky last year at the BMW Championship. And you know, oh, by the way, Brooks Koepka was in our group, which is, you know, that's, you know, I get an opportunity to play with these people who are, you know, I've been in a group with Michael Jordan. I've played with Doc Giffen, Arnold Palmer's longtime, you know, confidant and friend and assistant, and Phil Mickelson. And I think John Ashworth's an amazing guy. I grew up, you know, saving money to get an Ashworth golf shirt at my old mm-hmm. club in Oakmont, just enough to be able to, when did the new shirts come in? You know, I tried to get sweeps money so I could get an Ashworth shirt, go on to meet him, befriend him. He's like a big brother mentor to me, and he practices what he preaches. He walks the walk, and that's really rare nowadays. But you know, I've played with these kids in Grayling, Michigan, who were in a car accident on their way to a high school tournament. One of the kids, Jake Hinkle, you know, he was in a coma. He had to learn how to walk again. He went on to get a golf scholarship at a small school in Michigan. Ben Crenshaw, and Mike, you know, all these guys. It's really hard to choose from, but I. If I really had to say one person, honestly, guys, I talk about it a lot, but you know, have you guys ever met Bill Coore? I mean, Bill yes. Coore came from nothing. He came from nothing in a small little town, you know, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from Pinehurst. He grew up, you know, his mother worked 3 jobs to support him, never had a father. His neighbor, you know, used to take him to play the game of golf. He would design holes around his little house and play to the mailbox and over the house if his mom wasn't home and around the house if she was home. He goes on to redo Pinehurst number 2, a course that he used to pile into a car with his buddies to go play for, you know, $5 a round. Bill Coore spends 100 days on property, you know. At every course he builds, they've built 30 courses in 30 years. You know, I mean, Bill Coore to me, you know, 250 years from now, when they talk about this generation of architecture and golf and the time that we're in and what's going on, I think he's going to be revered as you know, the way we talk about Seth Rayner and the CB McDonalds and the Perry Maxwells and all, you know, George Thomas, all those guys. Well, Bill Coore is on that. That's where he is. And he's humble about it. He's supportive of everybody who works for him. He promotes and encourages the younger generation to, you know, exercise their minds and their, you know, it's, you can go on and on. He's to me a special person. Not just a special builder of golf courses. So I feel so fortunate to have spent so much time with him and watched him. You know, there's days he'll spend one full day on one green just driving around. No pee breaks, no lunch break. He's just driving around to the point where Mike Kaiser comes out and goes, "Hey Bill, you know, some point, are you going to finish this green? Are we going to finish this course at some point? I mean, we have an opening day at some point. You know, we got to get to." I mean, he's a treasure. He really is. Yeah, just ask Ben Crenshaw, who's the most interesting man. I bet he says Bill Coore.
I have to say something just occurred to me because you seem to surround yourself with people like Bill Kaur, because John Ashworth is the same kind of guy. There's mentors, and I think you attract them the same way they attract you. I'm just saying. That's just my hit.
I don't know.
You don't have to comment. That's just my opinion. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's about who you're with, right? And life is too short to surround yourself with people who, you know, that don't fit a lot of those, check a lot of the boxes, mm-hmm. the humility and graciousness and walk the walk and, who get it, whatever it is, you know. I that's probably my upbringing. I think, you know, my father always, and my mother, you know, my family made sure I always remembered where I'm from and stay humble and, don't take things for granted and be appreciative and look around and take it all in, and life is short. And so when you get those lessons early on, you know, if you want something, you got to work for it. You make your own luck. All that kind of stuff is what I heard. You know, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. All that kind of stuff is what my parents taught me. And then you end up surrounding yourself with people who are like-minded, and that's when it starts getting fun.
Wow. All right. Your last question, we could have that particular discussion for a long time, but we're going to get to your ninth question now. What's the one, and I have a feeling, again, I keep feeling like I have an idea of what you're going to say, but the one golf course you wish everyone knew about, and, well, I'll just ask it that way. What's the one golf course you wish everyone knew about?
Here's the way I'll answer this question, because my job is to try to shine the light on places that I want people to know about. So when I tell people about, when I tell people about Winter Park, and I tell people about Goat Hill Park, I tell people about, you know, Coronado or you know, any of the places that we've stumbled upon, the Yard Glasses and the Cruden Bays and all the quote hidden gems and, you know, those kind of things. That's what I feel like I've been doing for the last 12 years. The one course that I've recently played, and you'll see it in an upcoming feature that we do on Golf Advisor and Golf Channel, and we call it Ayoub National. It's just a little two-hole course outside of Marrakesh. It's this kid, Ayoub, and I'm gonna get his last name for you before the end of the answer to this question, but Ayoub is a kid who grew up in Marrakesh in a little village right next door to, you know, one of the Royal Golf Course of Marrakesh. And he no running water in his village, and didn't have access to a lot of golf. They did allow him to play the golf course next door a couple days a week, and now he can play it 7 days a week. He's about 20, 21 years old, and he designed his own little golf course. Tees and pins in this dirt patch with weeds and bushes, and he dug his own little holes, and you know, that's where he learned the game. And I got to play that golf course with this guy who might go on to play on the European Tour, might go on to play on the PGA Tour. I wouldn't bet against him.
Is this the guy on Instagram that you kept putting up video of that you played with?
Yeah,
he's a joke. Yeah. I mean, he's unbelievable.
He's unbelievable. He's unbelievable, and he's got the greatest attitude and the biggest smile and the brightest light in his eyes. And he, you know, like I said, I wouldn't bet against him. I mean, so to play, you know, what we call Ayoub National, what an experience that, you know, of all the places we get to go and see and do, I mean, to play this little golf course with this guy, and to see this, to see where he grew up playing, you know, it was an arrow through the heart and soul. It was like, wow. I mean, this is why you don't take things for granted. You know, people like this, places like that.
And it's a two hole golf course. What are the two holes like?
Yeah. It's straight, and it's, you know, bushes, and, you know, it's got a tee and a green, and everything in between is just, you know, rocks and hazards, and, you know, but it's nothing. It's nothing, but it's his golf course, and it's where he grew up. And, you know, we went out and played it in the hole that he had dug you know, a couple of years before it was still there. And I mean, you know, those are the kind of things that, you know, we stumble upon. You go, my gosh, what a game, what a game.
It's nothing and it's everything.
It's nothing and it's everything. It's all that he needed. It's all that he needed. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's, you know, and here we go, the Greens are crappy today out here. What the heck is going on? You know, what? That guy is never going to have a bad lie in his life. He's never going to look down and be like, what the heck happened? I got a bad break. You know, no. He's already at the age of 21. I wish all my nephews and nieces could go meet this guy. He brought me back to his village and he had a room in his village where he grew up, and, you know, and it's the most immaculate, you know, dirt floors, no running water. And he invited me back. His brother had made tea and had a bowl of dates there for me. And you know, I'm gracious and, you know, kind and just warm and sharing and caring. And, you know, this is where he grew up. And I'm telling you, this kid's the real deal. It's going to be an amazing story. It already is one.
Wow. That is great.
All right, Darren, I think that's the answer to the next bonus question we were going to have.
Yeah, we were going to ask the bonus question. Tell us your best golf course story. What's the coolest, weirdest, craziest thing you've ever seen or done on a golf course? But it sounds like you answered it, Matt.
That's definitely way up the list for sure.
Unless there's something incredibly pressing that's even weirder or cooler or crazier.
I have a couple stories. I'm saving them for my book one day, but Phil, I played the Bridges with Phil Mickelson after a Golf Digest shoot one time, and we started on the back nine, and on the back nine, it's either the 12th or 13th hole. It's a par four with a ravine in front of the green. It plays about 375 yards downhill, and this was quite a few years ago, so before guys were hitting it like 489 yards, but Phil was my partner in a little two-man game against Guy Yoakum of Golf Digest and T.R. Ryman of Team Phil Mickelson, and playing for $20, and it was as though we were playing for $2 million. I'm telling you, because Phil was so into it, and he teed off on the par four, and he kind of slipped, his back foot slipped out, and he hit it out of bounds, like off the plant. Ball still going in the wrong direction, probably to this day, and he goes, "Oh, my foot slipped." And he re-tees, and he hits it to about 20 feet, again 370 yards, and makes the putt for par. And I was like, "What? Just like par four, hit it out of bounds." And 370 yards and made a four. And I was like, I think I got the right partner today. We ended up closing out on the 16th green, won $20. And it was, you know, we high fived and it was great. You know, but you see when those guys do that kind of stuff, you think to yourself, oh, people are talking bifurcation. Let me tell you something. We do not play the same game as those guys. Right. I don't care what you say or what you think. If you go play side by side, they are playing a different game already. Different tees, different setup, different green speeds, different everything. They're different than us. They are Velociraptors. They are an elite class. And to think that we're playing the same game them is ridiculous. So go the other way. Play the Persimmon Woods. Go to 6,500 yards and have fun.
I love the complete comparisons. You realize what you just got in there? Phil, aliens, Velociraptors, golf.
Persimmon Woods.
Well, I hear Velociraptors and Persimmon Woods in the same sentence all the time. No, that's perfect. All right, Matt. I don't know what to say. I know I speak for Darren that both of us are just beyond thrilled that we could spend so much time in an obviously busy life. For you to take this much for our 100th and 101st episodes really means a lot. I think we got to dive in deep, which I hope is okay with you, and I thank you for everything. If we just listened to your description of the last question about Aoub National, we would know everything about you that we need to know. And
well, you'll see more of it. You'll see more of it, and I'll send links out. But it's all you need to know. It's all you need to see to know that we live in a special world and we get special opportunities and meet special people and get to play special places. And you know, when you look at him and you look at his smile and you look at where he's going, and, you know, he could have easily sat down and said, you know, I got nothing, I'm going nowhere, woe is me. And he did the opposite. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to know. Kids these days, right?
Yeah,
kids
who knows? What are they thinking? Why doesn't he play a video game somewhere?
Yeah.
But the fact that you're so touched by it and wrapped up by it is what I was talking about. And thanks for everything you do. You shine a light really on a whole lot that's important, and it's not just about golf. So obviously we appreciate you being with us for these two episodes. And as I said, I know I speak for Darren too. Out there at Matt Janella GC on Twitter, at Matt _ Janella on Instagram. You should know that already, and everything else you need to know, you're going to keep finding out from the best in the business. Matt, thanks a million.
Boys, I always appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you at a golf course someday real soon. And thanks for the opportunity and the conversation. And keep doing what you're doing. I would say we're all in this together. And I really do believe, I think golf is in a great place right now. And I'm looking forward to sort of introducing it to my son and my wife's kids, and having all the experiences that I've had with them.
That's the thing. I mean, I find myself with friends who haven't got to travel, you know, for the last 10, 20 years the way I have, and just trying to take them to places that they might not ever see. And there's so much out there in the world. And like we talked about in the earlier episode, not all of it costs, you know, bucket list prices. Some of it is just amazing golf at a very good rate. So thanks to you. And thanks as always to the listeners. We couldn't do it without them either. And if you're following us, follow us on the social media, ask us questions, rate us on iTunes, help us spread the word about the best in golf travel. Mitch?
And that is absolutely true. God, we're so lucky. That's all you got to keep telling us. Tom Petty, he may have left us, but he is still with us. He ran down his dream. Matty G, always running down his. Darren and I doing our best. Now you go on. Keep running down your dream. So long.